Always Aggravated, a Mike Valenti signature podcast.
So this week on Always Aggravated, we got a good one for you. A little bit March Madness, a little bit lousy franchises. Our next edition of that, the Washington Wizards. But we have a sit-down with Vinny Magliulo, 40-year vet of the gambling industry. Co-host My Guys in the Desert with Brent Musburger, weekdays 6 to 8 on VSiN or SiriusXM 204. We ask him, March Madness for an odds maker, a bookmaker. How do you do it? What goes into it? Really interesting, wide-ranging conversation on that. And like I said, we'll even give you a little dirt on the Wizards. So, take a listen. Vinny Magliulo, 40-year vet of the gambling industry. Let me ask you this. It's because I heard you talk a little bit about it, and I was fascinated. It's kind of the give me the over-under on sleep for you between now and Easter Sunday.
Well, listen, sleep's overrated, right? I mean, you know, so I grew up in New York. Sinatra sang it, the city that never sleeps. I come here, we're open 24/7. So you just basically take naps. I'm kind of living at the South Point for this week. This is actually a busier week than the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl builds up its one game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all the props and everything like that. You know, New Year's, you get through the game-by-game situation. But this is sustained, you know, for these first 4 days are just nonstop. Even when there's a bit of a break between the games, because that's when everybody's reloading and, you know, that's when we're recharging. So I tell people all the time, I say, you know, they say, Vinny, is it true that this business is 24/7? I tell them, no, that's an exaggeration. It's really 25/8.
That was one of the things too, is you know, the average bettor sits back and they look, oh, hey, look, the numbers are up. Oh, that was magical. They don't understand what goes into it. And to a certain extent, I don't understand. And I thought your conversation was fascinating about creating these numbers and kind of, I mean, Vin, you've been in the industry for almost 40 years. How do you compare the way you used to do it, information-wise, techniques, technology, to the way you're doing it now?
Great, great question, because, you know, 40 years ago, first of all, it wasn't the event that it is now. And again, so let's put it into context, guys. You know, the Super Bowl is still the single most wagered event of the year. So for a single game, a single event, this year, $146 million bet on the Super Bowl. But March Madness, because it encompasses 2.5 weeks, mm-hmm. it's about 2.5 times that. And there are many more tickets written on it. But so what we used to do was, you know, the pairings came out. There wasn't, you know, we didn't have to put the games up until Monday or Tuesday. So we had plenty of time. I used to go home on Sunday once the finals were put in for the conference tournaments. And simply, all right, let's look at it. Let's look at the regions. And what we did was, back then, we would put up the overall future book first and then the regions. Well, now, you know, you got a situation where it's become so big, we said, listen, you know what? And if you guys look, there's a piece in the New York Post today that actually talks about how we did it. Chris Andrews, who's the director at South Point, our colleague and friend Rich Bachelary and I, we sat down, we independently made our own numbers, and then we compared them and put them in. That part, and I don't mean to trivialize it, is pretty straightforward. The logistics of it, guys, is this. So now with everything computerized, you've got to assign for betting interest numbers so that when you walk to the counter, it's not just the team you want to bet, but there's a number associated with that team to put into the computer. So the first game tomorrow is Minnesota and Louisville. Well, so there's got to be a centralized gathering point for all these numbers. So there's folks at that entity watching the pairings come in. They assign those numbers. Then we put in the odds. And you got to set up every game at the same time. Why? Because the time changes don't come out until the next day. So you have the logistics of it, as well as now the odds-making side of it. But you know what? I'll credit the staff all the way around for the job they did, because within an hour we had every game posted for this tournament, which was we did it the last 2 years as well. So this is the third straight year we did it, and credit to staff, and it was very well received. And you had people betting anywhere from $500 to $10,000 per bet.
No, and it's interesting because when you look at kind of the way it used to be and the way it is now, I would imagine the computers have at least saved you from that oh shit moment that your number's like 3 or 4 points off of another shop's number. Has it kind of normalized it to where, okay, hey, I may be a half point off or there's a point differential versus maybe in the old days there would have been a looser number?
Yeah, good question, Mike. You're able to track what's happening around the industry a lot easier now. There was a time when there was not the ability to you'd have to literally be on the phone calling people or colleagues and things like that. But by the same token, when you're first, you're putting your opinion on the line, and so you're especially when you're taking a big bet to it. You know, when you're willing to take 10,000 or 10 dimes, as we say, then you know you got to make sure that you've got certainly confidence in your numbers, which we do, because the bettors are betting with conviction, especially professionals that are betting that amount. So yeah, you know. There was nothing else to compare it to when we put them up. We were the first ones to put them up, so you're out there.
Yeah.
And you know that going in. In our case, we knew that going in, and but we welcomed it too. And of course, you know, the publicity side of that is also worth quite a bit as well.
No, the other thing too, and I don't know, maybe this is just me being a radio host, and then I come out to Vegas, and I always track the lines, and we do a Sunday NFL show here, we track the lines, and we come out for March Madness. But here's the thing, and this is, I always feel like Vegas has a pipeline to information that no one else has. When someone gets hurt, and it ain't on the board, but you look at a number and you go, damn, that looks strange. You guys know. I don't know how you know, but you know.
Well, Michael, you know, it's that's a good point, and it's an interesting point. Sometimes we don't always know at first, but what we'll do is that's where you have limits, and that's somewhat of a protection. But what we do, and at South Point, one of our philosophies is we embrace sophisticated bettors, professionals. And what I mean by that is those are the ones that you have to respect everybody's bet. There are certain people, though, when they bet, you have to assume that they've got that knowledge as well. And so the way they're betting is a valuable tool because, obviously, it's contributing to the handle and it generates business. But you've got to respect those opinions and utilize it as a tool. Now, again, this is not a critique by any means, but frankly, there are operators out there that don't want that kind of business. We would prefer to have that kind of business because it's also knowledge, and it's good insight and intel. So the way we try to find out is, we're always monitoring reports. Anymore, you've got to get on social media, right? There's a lot of things on social media, and then you've got to discern what's accurate and what's not. If there's a real question on a particular on a player, let's say it's in a football game, mm-hmm. A quarterback or a running back or a key receiver, or in the case of the NCAA tournament, where there's a key player that that's not 100% or may not be playing, you could always hold up on that game. What I mean by that is suspend wagering just temporarily until you get a better read or find out and get confirmation as to something like that happens. But certainly the flow of information is greater today than it was at one time.
And we're talking with Vinny Magliulo again, and it's I guess there's that old phrase where it's kind of the public bets teams and the pros bet numbers. You want to explain that for people who kind of aren't familiar with that?
Yeah, well, what I mean by that, Mike, and it's a good point. It's an important point for folks to realize, and it's not right or wrong. It's simply a matter of for instance, in Detroit, Detroit Lions fans, Tiger fans, you know, Red Wings, they're going to bet, you know, they're going to bet on their home teams. They're going to bet on the Pistons for the most part because they're fans and they feel a loyalty to that. What professionals will do is say, you know what, I don't think that this particular team, even though I live here, is playing real well right now, and I think there's value on the other side. Professionals will look at situations. You know, is the home team coming home after a long road trip? There's a lot of pressures on players coming home off an extended road trip, right when they get back back in town. And you know, you might get a team that's coming in that's very fresh. They might have been off for a couple of days and just literally, you know, almost lying in wait, or they had an easier game the night before or the week before, depending on the sport. And so pros will focus in on numbers and the situations surrounding those numbers, whereas the casual fan will say, this is my team and I'm going to back them. You know, what pros will be, you know, pros will be fans of the teams that they have action on, and that'll vary from day to day and week to week.
Well, and it's something I've always wondered, and I don't know if you can pin it down, because obviously each game has a different level of action on it. But look, you see at the time of this taping, I mean, Belmont came out, they were a pick'em in their game against Temple. Time of taping, it's out to 3.5. Or you look at Yale, they were 10-point dog. Time of taping, it's 7.5.
Right.
How much money does it take to move a line to 3 points? I've always wondered.
Great question. And it ties into the topic we were just talking about professionals and casual fans. What we have in our business is there's a term that we use, and it's and we abide by, is booking the faces. So, you know, if there's somebody who's a professional, they may bet, you know, half of what a good casino customer or somebody who's betting casually will bet. So, classic example, you know, we have a lot of other options here in Las Vegas. You know, you have good casino game players, right? So you might get somebody from the pit who's, you know, betting $5,000 a hand in blackjack, and they come to the book and, hey, you know what? You used Yale as an example. I'm a Yale alum. What can I bet on Yale? Well, you can bet, you know, $10,000. Oh, okay, good. I'll bet $10,000. So, you know what? But if the sophisticated player comes up, I might leave it there. I might move it a half a point.
Right.
But if the sophisticated player comes up and A, bets that side, it's an immediate move for me, and I'd probably move it a full point. Or if he bets the other side, I'm just going to leave it right where it is based on your bet or his bet or the casual player's bet. So it depends. It's not only the amount.
It's who.
When it comes to moving numbers, it's who made the wager and when did they make that wager and how far in advance. So you brought up a good example in the case of the Yale-LSU game where the game's moved 3 points.
Yeah.
It moved very quickly because the majority of that action that came in was professional action, and it has stabilized, and now as we get closer to game time, and that game is a 9:40 Pacific start on Thursday, then you're looking at a situation where that's kind of stabilized. It may come back the other way, and the numbers will move a lot slower.
All right, a quick break just to talk about our launch sponsor. It's the D Las Vegas. You're looking to get away, relax, have a good time. D Las Vegas has everything you need. I mean, hell, we're there every March for March Madness, and as I've said before, there ain't no better setup. On the strip, off the strip, it don't matter. Go to the D. Go to that chalet upstairs. It ain't nothing better. Bottom line, next time you go to Vegas, check out thed.com. Completely renovated. Downtown is not what you remember. Hell of a lot of new places. It's a damn good time. There's really no other way to put it. And again, the D has everything you need. You're not going to spend a ton of money on the room. Take that money and go do fun things with it. Do what Sully does. Make a bunch of losing basketball bets. Or for Sully, fall asleep on the horse racing machine on the second floor vintage casino. The bottom line, the D's got it all. They got the sports book. They got the long bar. They got it all. Check it out. TheD.com to book your stay today. It's TheD.com, the D Las Vegas. And as you know, it is your home for Detroit sports in Vegas. So what bet amount constitutes a serious bettor, where someone you at least, let's say over the course of 4 days, you begin to pay attention to if they come to your book and they start firing on games? What's that bet number that would trigger your attention?
It depends on the sport, but I try to be respectful. Listen, here's the thing, Mike. You know, people come up, and this is the ultimate area where people put their money where their mouth is. They back their opinion with their cash, and you always respect that, whether it's, you know, $5 or $5,000. But it depends on the sport, because, you know, different sports have different limits, and this is obviously one of the events that has very high limits. You know, if I see somebody who's, you know, obviously you're going to pay attention to the $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 wagers very closely, but you also want to pay attention to that individual that's coming up and maybe betting $500 or $1,000 at a time, and they're betting the, you know, certain moves, or they're betting certain numbers, and they're having success in doing so. Are they also betting first halves and half times? Are they betting in game, which has become an extremely popular? It's actually the fastest growing area.
Ben, I got your number one customer sitting across from me, my producer, Mike Sullivan. His middle name is In Game.
I cannot wait for this weekend. All the in-game bets, you get a flow for the game. It's great.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up. Because a lot of times, as a bettor, now here you have an option, right? You can bet a game, you know, before it starts. Great, you know. But now you can actually augment your opinion with in-game wagering. You know, say, look, I really like my selection here, and I think I made the right call, and this team is really, I think they're going to dominate the entire game. Or you might start fiddling around with the prices if, you know, you see a game where, you know, teams are going on different runs. Well, then you can kind of, you know, get middle some numbers and things like that as well. So, I give credit to the folks that are betting these in, because you have to bet very quickly also. It's not like you could sit there, pre-flop, so to speak, before the game starts, and you have plenty of time.
Oh, right? Make your head explode.
You've got to, yeah, you're sitting there and you're going, wow, look at this. Well, you're doing that on one game or a couple of games. Well, we're going to be, have in-game on all these games simultaneously. So we have actually folks dedicated strictly to the in-game. And again, as I mentioned, it's because it's actually the fastest growing area of our industry right now.
So March Madness is insane. It's why we love it. Okay, even though it causes you to probably take 5 years off your life. It's just the crazy endings, the bad beats, the insanity. So here's my question, Vin. Are you at a point in your career where, for self-preservation and stress management, you just turn your back on the endings of these games and you go, I'll just check the score? Or do you sit there living and dying knowing what you need to happen versus what's about to happen on that screen?
You know, Mike, it's a good question. I try not to get emotionally involved, because I know this. There are going to be games that the house wins. There are going to be games that the public does better on, and the public wins. But I've learned this. First of all, you have to like what you're doing, and if you live and die on every basket or every game, you'll have a very short career. Know this: the math is in the house's favor, that if folks win, you pay them with a smile, because they're going to reinvest. There's very few people that are going to cash out a ticket at the end of the day and not walk past all those blinking lights and all that felt that's around the casino. So to me, what I focus on is the overall property experience. While if the book has a good day, then you don't gloat either, because you know what? Like I said, you respect the people for putting their money where their mouth is. Put on a good, put up a good product, put on a good show, let them enjoy themselves. Certainly, we're in the business to make money. Don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, which is really at the end of the year, we're going to be just fine. But it's also about the overall property and how it does to the property and for the property. And you know, you look at Las Vegas this coming weekend, another weekend where we're going to have over 300,000 people in town. That's a boost for the entire economy. So I focus on that, and I think that certainly helps That definitely helps from a sanity perspective.
Is there one game or one day that sticks out to you that was just a bloodbath for you, where you go, yeah, oh my God?
Yeah, worst beating I ever took as a bookmaker. Tyson Holyfield won. Where Mike Tyson opened as such a prohibitive favorite, and it depended on where you were in Las Vegas, but there were some places that had Tyson as a 20-1 favorite. I remember I was at Caesars at the time, and I opened them high. I didn't open them that high. I opened them probably about 15-16-1. And I'll never forget I actually opened them low for that particular time. I think I opened them like 8-1. And I'll never forget the first bet that we took was a six-figure bet on Tyson. So they were laying the favorite, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Something tells me, and it was a regular customer, a guy I knew from Chicago, really a good customer, and a respected opinion. But I said to myself, you know what? Something tells me that we're going to get plenty of Holyfield money on this fight. So I didn't even move it. I didn't. He put up. He laid 8-1 for six figures, and I left it. Well, that fight closed about 2-1. I mean, it was such a move to Holyfield. And of course, you know, we know that what happened in that fight, and Holyfield wound up winning the fight. So it was a memorable event, but again, it was great for the great business for the city. It was terrific for the property at the time because there was a lot of business. But that one was the biggest single loss that I can remember, that first Holyfield Tyson fight.
What are your what are the book's biggest liabilities for Thursday and Friday for the tournament? I mean, like the games where you go, huh? If this doesn't go our way, this one's going to hurt.
Well, you know, again, it's still pretty early as of this airing, guys. But there's definitely been a lot of support. Years ago, it used to be very predictable. The general public bet on favorites, and
right,
the sharp action came in on the underdogs. But the public's getting involved with some of these favorites right now. You mentioned LSU and Yale. Yale's getting support there. Wofford. Everybody was all about Wofford and Belmont getting in the tournament. Well, they're back in both of those two teams. Of course, Belmont's got to be in the playing game. So you're seeing backing there. You've also got Duke. Duke has been popular from the beginning of the season.
Right.
Now they're waiting for a play-in opponent as well. But they were back before the season on the future book. They were back during the season, and of course, you know, with Zion Williamson back now, they're definitely getting a lot of support. North Carolina's gone back and forth. That game got up to 25, and there was buyback for Iona. Cincinnati is getting some support, right? Oregon getting plenty of support with their current form against Wisconsin is also getting quite a bit of...
I don't know whether I should be terrified or not, because you mentioned two of the games I'm looking forward to playing. I know Wofford's a good ball club and they shoot the three great, but I'm going, wait a second. You're starting to lay points to a Seton Hall team that is playing good basketball,
exactly,
better conference. I'm going... I'm going to get butchered, or I'm going to win the game by 10.
Well,
I don't know which.
Mike, on the one hand, you say to yourself, well, look, you know what? If you haven't bet it yet, you know, it's tough to lay it now, right, because it's already up to 3 in most places, right, or and climbing. So you got to say, wait a second. Now, it's interesting because when we put the numbers up on Sunday evening, that game opened 1. It went to 2 and then went to 3, and then within an hour, a gentleman walked up and said, "Give me Seton Hall plus 3 for 10 dimes. You know, 11,000 to win 10,000." So, we kind of know the buyback threshold at this point with them. But
yeah.
Yeah, I know. But the other thing is, I would tell you too. You know, if you like a side, don't change it. Maybe that's where you say, "Look, if it doesn't come back to a lower number, let's say a 1 or 1.5." Then that's where you have the option now to bet the in game, right? Because now you see how the game starts off, and you know, then you might get a better price.
I'm just worried by the time the plane touches down tomorrow, I won't get the 3 points with Seton Hall. But I just, you know, it's funny. It's Vin, this is why I do not bet at home. I come to Vegas to get my action and do my stuff. But like, you talk yourself in and out of things. I'm looking at it and I'm going, oh my God, am I the only guy on the planet who likes Seton Hall? What am I running into a buzzsaw here?
Well, no, I can tell you, there's a guy, like I said, the other night who put up 11,000 on him. So you're not alone.
I'm going to go down with the ship.
You're going to be with, you're going to have some company. But yeah, there's, but those, you know, those are the games. But, and there's really quite a bit of two-way action so far. Oh, you know, Iowa State's getting some backing too, right? I mean, there's, there really weren't as many, hey, they don't belong in the tournament
no.
this year teams. But Ohio State, if there's one, maybe there was some. A little bit of question.
I thought it was the weakest bubble I've ever seen because it was just a bunch of bad teams. It really was.
Well, the St. Mary's result and some of those like that really contributed to that, right, when you think about it, because otherwise that would have been a one-bid conference, the West Coast Conference.
Right.
Gonzaga had prevailed. So, yeah, as championship week went on, you had a situation where as teams played themselves. That's why if you were above, if you were the Clemsons and NC States of the world,
mm-hmm.
you were rooting for all the favorites.
Sure.
In not only your conference and your team, but you were rooting for the number one seeds in the other conferences because basically same thing happened with Texas, right? You know, it just was a situation where as some upsets occurred for the number one seeds that killed a few teams. I mean, you know, West Virginia went in a couple of games, especially that game they won against Texas Tech. They burst a few bubbles, no doubt.
I got two more for you, and I appreciate your time. I look, Brent's a legend. We love him. And I don't know if you can or are willing, but do you have a Musburger betting story that you are willing or able to tell us? Like, just because.
Oh, sure. Brent is great. And first of all, it's a thrill to work with him, but I'll tell you one thing about Brent. Brent is, if he says that he likes something, he bets it. He's a man of conviction. I mean, he's not just doing it for fluff or touting or anything like that. So if Brent tells you, listen, you know, this is something I'm gonna look at, he does it. In fact, there's times when we're on air and we go to commercial, and he's like, I'll be right back. And he's not going to the men's room. He's heading right to the counter right behind me. So, and that's fine. And people love it. It's good. He goes up and he bets it. He actually has a position on a proposition. And he talked about this on the air. We put up a prop in January, on January 13th. And at the time, Kansas and Gonzaga were still healthy.
Yeah.
We put up Gonzaga, Duke, Michigan, and Kansas against the field.
Hmm.
And we had those four we had it up pick 'em, -110 both sides. And we had a gentleman come in and bet those four for $100,000, and then we moved it. Well, Brent has since taken a position, since the brackets came out, that he took the field.
Yeah.
And he laid 6-5 with the field, because let's remember, you know, the price has been adjusted, but he's getting the, you know, he's getting Tennessee, he's getting Kentucky, he's getting Virginia, Texas Tech, Houston, he's getting a lot of quality teams there. Auburn's playing well right now. So Brent's got a position right now on the field versus the four. And again, the four are Duke, Kansas, Michigan, and Gonzaga. So he's terrific. He shares his bets. He gets out there, and if he says it on air, he'll go bet him.
Last one, it's something I discovered. I did a little research on you because obviously I listen around the tournament. It's enjoyable, but I found out you're a horse guy like myself, which is near and dear to my heart. I grew up near Saratoga. I know you're a Belmont guy, a King Umberto's guy. Fine. But I wanted to ask you this, and it's not necessarily, we all know what's going on at Santa Anita's awful. But
yeah.
I was interested in your response from a business end of it with what the Stronach Group came out saying. Because I feel like it's a bait and switch. I feel like they're going to have no business, and no one's going to be running at Santa Anita. That's not good for your business. What did you make of the statement they came out with last week and kind of just the state of horse racing at Santa Anita moving forward?
Well, Mike, you know, it's not just to me. I mean, obviously the seriousness of the situation at Santa Anita with 22 horses having to be put down, and you know, now the controversy, is it the track, is it not, you know, who's responsible, is it the, you know, are these unfit horses, and is that why there's, you know, the drugs and what's allowed and what's not, what dose and things. But really, when you think about it, really it's kind of across the board. It's an industry that's struggling across around the country. I would like to see a situation where we have more quality and in quantity. I think you have an industry that's competing with itself, really. Mm-hmm. And now, with sports wagering in particular expanding, let's remember, there are seven other states besides Nevada now that have legal sports wagering.
Yep.
And all other forms of wagering. There's only two states in the United States that do not have any form of wagering, whether it be pari-mutuel horse racing or a lottery, and that's Utah and Hawaii. Now, all that said, people are smarter today, too. People are more educated today. And when they look at the takeouts that they're going up against at a racetrack, and you know the chances of winning a race, and you hope to have good fields, right? Because and let's face it, one of the problems, particularly in California, is the small size of the fields. Well, obviously, the bigger the fields, the bigger the, you know, there's more liquidity in the pools, and now that'll attract people, especially on a race like the Derby. But the Derby's an anomaly. Right?
Yeah, it's a 20 horse demolition Derby, and it's massive,
and everybody gets
pools
involved in it.
Right.
So that's great. But now you got a situation, getting back to what I was talking about, where people have so many other betting options. You're going to say, look, I got a 50-50 shot. Maybe I'm laying 11-10 on a college basketball game.
Right.
But I'm also, you know, I got a better chance of winning. And there's frankly more value there.
But Vin, what kills me is these are the same people who will run a 15 race card at Gulfstream.
Right.
And nine of the races, and I mean, I go to Pegasus, I go to Gulfstream once a year. Mm-hmm. Nine of the races aren't bettable. I mean, I could sit down with you and we could have a drink, and I go, Vin, I can't handicap this, right? So now they're going to tell me, oh, well, it's the cheap races that are the problem, or it's Lasix that's the problem. Guys, your track took a foot of water and it froze. There's something wrong with your track. That's it.
You know, really, the PR move. Now, this is very expensive. What I'm going to say is very expensive. So I'm not trying to spend somebody else's money, because that's not what I would do. But when you think about it, right, you have a situation here. Does it make sense to say, look, we got to bite the bullet. We got to fix this track. We got to finish. We can't finish this meet. We've got to redo the track.
Yes.
And make it better. Because the other thing, Mike, that's where the Breeders' Cup is supposed to be.
Well, that's why they won't go back to Poly, because they'll take themselves out of the Breeders' Cup pool.
So think about this. Now you have a situation where, wow, the Breeders' Cup is watching. They're being very quiet now, but don't think for one minute that they're not paying very close attention to what's happening here. And at some point, look, you know, look what's happened. You know, next year there's not Greyhound racing is going away. So what happens now with all the other side of this whole thing with what's right and what's safe for these animals? So. Again, not trying to spend anybody else's money, but by the same token, it's a situation where you got to look at, you know, the portrait, not just the snapshot, and how to fix this thing, and hopefully they get it right, because economically here, for the state of Nevada, California racing is one of the most important aspects for our racing business. You know, we do great. You mentioned Saratoga. You know, the NIRA circuit is big for us in Florida, the Kentucky circuit in Illinois, you know, Midwest. But to be honest with you, you know, the industry needs Santa Anita to get this situation rectified.
Oh, Vin, if Santa Anita starts looking at winters in Ozone Park, that's a problem. A five horse fee? No, I'm sorry, you're not getting any of my money on it. And I love playing the ponies.
To me, I'd rather see several days if they have to cut out racing for.
Yes.
It's got to be about quality, not quantity, at this point.
Yeah,
they're
all
competing with each other.
I think we're just headed to, like, if they're gonna stay afloat in California. First of all, I don't know how they're gonna do this with, you know, no Lasix and all this other stuff. Okay, well then you better be prepared for a 2-day a week meet, Saturday and Sunday. I think that's just what they're headed to.
And you want to know what? If they get 2 days a week or if they get 3 days a week and they're full fields and
yes.
you know that, then okay, I'm okay with that,
yep.
right? I mean, then look, again, that's the quality compared to the quantity aspect of it. And I think people will adjust to it and they'll appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Valvin, I could talk to you for hours about that stuff. But look, I appreciate the time. Really looking forward to getting out there. Best of luck this week. Hopefully you get a few naps in, okay?
Same to you guys, and look forward, if you get a chance, stop by the South Point and ask for us, and we'd love to chat with you.
All right, you got a deal. Vin, take appreciate care, it. All right, best of luck this week.
Oh, one other shout-out out there, guys, if I could.
Yes.
To one of your listeners, whose daughter works with us at the South Point. Michael Dattis, I know, is a listener, and all the listeners in your area, we appreciate I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you guys today, and have the folks tune in. Hopefully they found it a little entertaining and informative, and folks tuning in to VSiN from the South Point as well. So appreciate
yeah.
it, and wanted to say hello to Michael, who's out there listening.
Not a problem. Vin, take care of yourself.
Take care, guys.
Hey, Vinny,
right.
Vinny, real quick before you get off,
yeah.
I got to ask you, any tips or locks to help us out this weekend while we're out there?
Can't help you.
Off the record, any tips for me? I seem like I get killed every time I go out there with basketball.
Well, do you have a good time?
Oh, it's great.
All right, so you're not getting that kill. But no, here's the thing. In my business, I don't want to really care who wins the game. I just want to watch. Don't ask me who I like. Ask me who I need.
That's
I like that.
There you go. That a baby. Yeah, here's the tip, Vin. Order another drink, Mike. There you go.
You know what? The best tip I could give you is just bet within your means. Have a good time. Don't chase. Just enjoy yourself. It's a lot of times folks take these types of events and say, I'm going to, you know, go all in and I'm going to get it all, win it all at one time in one day. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Then appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
All right.
We'll
talk to you
again.
You got it.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Hey guys, Sully here. And I want to take a minute to talk to you about our friends over at Copper Craft Distillery in Holland, Michigan. Now, fun fact for you. I'm actually wearing a cool Copper Craft sweatshirt right now. I've been walking around the office getting all sorts of compliments on it. So not only is their drinks great, but also they got a lot of cool merchandise you should check out too. But Copper Craft, I'm telling you, if you haven't tried their products, swing by your local retailer, your local liquor store, local grocery store, and try Copper Craft. Now, one of the first things you'll notice is the bottle. Beautiful bottle, beautiful presentation. It looks really, really nice. Get compliments on the bottles all the time. I've seen their social media, and when people are out and about at events, people love the way Copper Craft looks, and you're also going to love the way that it tastes. Copper Craft Distillery, whether it's bourbon, whether it's award-winning bourbon, by the way, their whiskey, their gin, even have vodka, they have anything you'd want to try, just give them a try. Copper Craft Distillery, Holland, Michigan, check them out today.
Well, nothing gives me more pleasure than talking about how lousy some organizations are. I have Hatchet with me. I've got Sully on the ones and twos. And many of you by request have said, hey, when is the next worst franchises in sports? Today. And don't worry, I've got a whole series of these guys, but I'm going to space them. We're going to go a few weeks in between. I don't want to do them all in a three-month period. I want you to savor the shittiness of some organizations that are out there. So this week, David was kind enough to take the lead on research and did a very, very nice job. If you haven't listened to the previous editions, go back and listen, okay? We have a grading scale, and we really deep dive into why these organizations are lousy and just how lousy they are ranked against their fellow inept franchises across all sports. This week, we bring you one of my favorites, the Washington Wizards. Now, on surface, you don't think about them, and that's the biggest problem. When you have the geographic advantage of playing in Washington, D.C., just like New York or Boston or Chicago or L.A., etc., that is supposed to help you. And the Wizards, it has never helped. And there are some factoids in here, including one of the most damning that you'll hear during our ongoing series, The Chronicles of Lousy Teams. But I'm going to save it. Our four categories, in case you haven't listened. Owner is a shithead index, on-field suckitude, off-field embarrassments, and the intolerable level of the fan base, i.e., are your fans assholes? So here we go. I want to start out with well, what used to be the Polans, but now is Ted Leonsis. Now, you're dealing with two different levels here. The Polans bought the team and moved him to D.C. Construction magnates, if you will. Realized that the Capitol Center was dated. They had always wanted to build an arena in downtown D.C. They decided to build the state-of-the-art MCI Center. It broke ground in 95, privately financed by the Polans. That is a plus. So when I go into ownership, I am going to factor in the Polans' time along with Leonsis' time. Privately financed arena, not publicly. You get a plus one. But Leonsis is the big feature for me. He is awful, including many times going to the media and complaining and whining about how they're at a disadvantage, that they're playing in a building that costs more than other teams. The Verizon Center deal he called the worst building deal in pro sports. Leonsis pays $36 million in mortgage annually on the Verizon Center. Wah, not my problem. Now, the Wizards' value, he acquired him for $550. They are currently estimated at $1.3 billion. You think anybody wants to listen to you cry? Like, is there anything worse than an owner who cries about money? Seriously,
it just comes across as so unrelatable.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying your building deal is great. I'm not saying it's the best in the world. But when you have made $800 million, do you think anyone cares you got to pay $36 million a year? Come on. What are we doing here? Now, Leonsis' biggest crime to me is Ernie Grunfeld. Ernie Grunfeld has been the GM of the Wizards before Ted Leonsis, all through the Leonsis tenure. I'm convinced Ernie Grunfeld will be there after Leonsis dies. I'm convinced Ernie Grunfeld will be running the Wizards from the grave. He's already run them into the ground. But Grunfeld's 15-year tenure is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, David, think about this. And you do a lot of the research for these, and I help you with it, but most GMs don't survive one failed rebuild. Grunfeld's on his third. Remember, he dates all the way back to putting together the Agent Zero, Gilbert Arenas, mm-hmm. Anton Jameson teams, Caron Butler. Do you realize that Ernie Grunfeld gave Anton Jameson a max extension at age like 33? Mm-hmm. That was Grunfeld. Those were Grunfeld's teams that had guns in the locker room, the Javaris Crittenden disaster, right? He then tries to rebuild them again. John Wall and Otto Porter. And didn't they trade the number 5 pick in the draft for like Randy Foy or something totally absurd?
Yep.
Okay, so Grunfeld, 2 failed rebuilds. He is now on his third after signing the single worst contract in the history of pro basketball. I'm not kidding you. This John Wall extension that they signed, this is before John Wall got hurt. It was the worst deal in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to end up paying John Wall over $40 million a year. Now John Wall blew his Achilles out. You had them go out, and they took Otto Porter, and they traded him for junk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ernie Grunfeld is one of the worst general managers in the league. It's an inarguable fact.
What, like, I found interesting is that he's been there so long. He's the second longest tenured GM in their history.
Yes.
Bob Ferry was there before. He's the longest one. He won a title for them in 78. Well, so that's understandable that he will be there long.
Well, here, and this is where we're going to bring in the facts, mm-hmm. right? This is how terrible they are. So he's been there for 15 years. He's made the playoffs 8 times. You go, wow, that's not bad. How about this? The Washington franchise has never won 50 games in a season. Ever. Never have so much as won 50 games in a season. You want to talk treadmill of mediocrity? You got it. Now look, Leonsis, you know what I think of him. We got to do an on-field score for him. Then you go with the on-court stuff. Never won 50 games. Haven't won, what? Won a championship 74-75 with Wes Unseld. That doesn't even count in my world. And when you look at them, you want to talk the treadmill of mediocrity. Look at the Wizards as an organization on the court. You allowed Michael Jordan to run your team. That's problem A1. B, you drafted Kwame Brown. All right, now we're off to a real terrible start. Have you had embarrassing draft picks? Have you gone out and really screwed things up? Yeah, how about these signings? And David, this is a great job by you. You signed Jason Smith to a 3-year, $16 million deal. The average person listening to this doesn't even know who Jason Smith is. Center, Colorado State, who people thought could shoot threes, but really can't.
Yep.
They traded a second-round pick for Trey Burke, no longer with the team. They re-signed Marcus Thornton. I don't even know if he's in basketball.
No, he's not.
They signed Andrew Nicholson to a 4-year, $26 million deal. Nobody knows who Andrew Nicholson is. Jan Mahimi. One of the worst deals in the league. He doesn't even play for the team. 4 years, $64 million. The John Wall extension. The Otto Porter. How about Otto Porter? Otto Porter gets this poison pill offer sheet from the Brooklyn Nets, if memory serves me right. Yes. All Washington had to do is say, we're out. See you later. What does Washington do? They match. A couple years later, they're giving him away. It's never winning 50 games. I almost get more angry at teams that reside in the middle, that have geographical advantages, and that don't get it done. I'm going to end up, when we go back through this, giving them a very high score for the futility index on court. Attendance, how about this? You're in the nation's capital. And I know D.C.'s not as sexy as New York or L.A. or Miami, but you're in the nation's capital. You're in D.C. How about the Wizards have not been higher than 21st in attendance in almost a decade? And in many of those years, 27th, 24th, 23rd, you're talking a team that has no excuses, got a downtown arena in the nation's capital. That's completely embarrassing. You're talking about a team that's been bypassed by the hockey team in their city, which is only acceptable for cities with less than four sports or an original six city. Do we all agree on that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you're talking on court, a total disaster, and they have failed to be above the 90% seat sold mark since Wall joined the team. I mean, that's utterly remarkable. Finally, the days are getting a little longer around here. Put those extra hours of sunlight to work by saving you more money. You can reduce your power bill with help from Power Home Solar, the number one residential solar provider in Michigan, one of the top solar installation companies in the nation. Power Home installs American-made panels, 30-year warranty, allowing you to own your power, not just rent it from the power company. As an official partner of the Lions, the company installed solar panels at Ford Field and Allen Park, and they seek to continue building a movement towards cleaner, greener energy by seeing if solar is right for your home. Go to powerhome.com. That's powerhome.com, or give them a call, 1-800-SOLAR-15, to schedule your free solar consultation today. Don't rent your power. Own it with help from Power Home Solar. Off-court embarrassment. Does it get any more embarrassing than a player bringing a gun into the locker room? Or a fight on the team plane over a card game? Or a player who used to be in your employ, I believe, going to jail for murder?
Yes.
Javaris Crittenden. Yep. I think the Wizards may have the highest off-court embarrassment score that we've had yet. So, let's go back through these, and then we'll end on the fan base. Let's start out ownership. I want to at least mildly consider the Polans did the best they could. And they privately financed an arena. Leonsis has only owned it for 8 years. So I can't put 50 years or 20 years on him. But I will tell you that keeping Ernie Grunfeld employed on a scale of 1 to 10 on the owner lousy index. David, I'm saying Ernie Grunfeld employment, I'm saying bitching about the stadium, and I'm saying the moves that you've signed off on, I'd put Leonsis at an 8.
Whew.
Even factoring in the goodwill the Polans had within the NBA, I'm putting the Wizards, is your owner a shithead index. I think Leonsis solid 8.
Can we compromise at a 6?
No.
I think that's fair. 4 and an 8, just meet in the middle, right?
But but then you're suggesting that he's not terrible. No, Ted Leonsis is terrible. Now, it has to reside somewhere north of 6.5. Terrible is 7 through 10. If you want to tell me he's the least of the terrible owners in the sport, fine. He's not Dolan, but he's... I'm standing firm at a 7.
I just think that he hasn't done as bad of a job as James Dolan has comparing franchises.
Right,
here.
But my point is Dolan's a 10. David, come on now. Think straight. You're telling, all right, now how about this? If you want to make a more credible case and I meet you at a 6.5, you tell me Leonsis has only owned the team for 8 years, 9 years. Maybe that's the best credibility you got. And his team has made the playoffs some of the years. I'll go to a 6.5, last, best, and final offer.
Okay, 6.5 it is.
All right, 6.5 ownership score. Let's go to on-court ineptitude. Franchise has been around for, 50-some-odd years, whatever it is.
58 years.
58 years, they have never won 50 games. It's an embarrassment. I would argue being in the middle for all those years, and then the times you've been bad, you've done nothing with the pick. I can't say that they're average. I can't say that they're terrible. I kind of feel like we're in a gray area with Washington where on-field ineptitude should probably be somewhere in the 6 range. You've never won 50 games, but you make the playoffs enough to make people believe you're not total dog shit, but you don't do anything when you're there. You're never one of the best teams. You go through all these rebuilds only to end up horrifyingly mediocre. I will go at a 6. I can't go higher, and I certainly can't go lower. I'll listen to arguments.
I would say it's even a little worse than a 6 slightly, just because it's, I think it's worse to be in that middle ground where you don't have a direction. And this is something we've talked about a lot, but when you don't have a direction to either go one way or the other, trying to fully rebuild, tank, or where you're at a team where you're a title team, just to be in the middle and not do anything is, I think, worse than
and
being just
terrible.
And
keep the same GM around for 15 seasons who has proven multiple times he can't get you to a better spot. I'll say 6. Sully, where are you at number-wise?
I would bump it up to right around a 7, probably.
Okay, David, where are you? Let's try to come to a consensus.
I feel crazy. I'll go with a 7. I was thinking 8.
Oh, my
just
God.
Just because
no.
It's the NBA.
Let's go off-field embarrassment. Off-court embarrassment, I'd go 10. Jordan, embarrassment. Kwame Brown's birth and the fact that he wore your jersey, embarrassment. The fact that your franchise at one point wore teal or turquoise, embarrassment. The fact that you had a cool nickname, and I understand the reasons behind changing it. Let's not go there today. But you were the Washington Bullets. That was cool. It rolled off the tongue. The Washington Wizards? The Wizards? There are no Wizards in Washington. And even if there were, I wouldn't use it as my damn nickname. I think it's terrible. Nobody wants to see a Wizard. I will put the Wizards at a 10 for off-field embarrassment based on uniforms, logo, team name, killing people, guns, just all of it. I will go a hard 10 on this one. I don't think you can be more embarrassing.
I would have to agree with the 10. I would, just because of the Gilbert Arenas thing alone. I mean, come on now.
A gun over a card game.
I mean, I know it's 2008 when it happened, but you have to know the history of why they changed the name in the first place, and then you do that.
Well,
come on now.
Exactly, and I don't want to go down the other road.
I mean, I would be in the 9, somewhere in the 9 range.
Okay, so you want, David, he's right. We don't want to make them the most embarrassing franchise ever. We haven't gotten to the Islanders yet.
Right,
do you
exactly.
Do you want to make it a 9?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
I'm comfortable
with a
9.
I'm fair with that.
Now, the last one is difficult. Are your fans assholes? I've never heard a bad word about Wizard or Bullet fans.
No.
Now, we have to go all the way back to the 80s where they had the professional heckler whose name escapes me, who used to wear the glasses and yell at people. That guy was definitely an asshole. Robin Ficker, a staple of the 1980s.
An attorney, a real estate broker, and a political activist.
And a complete asshole.
Who goes to these games and heckles.
Well, used to. I don't even know if he's still alive. The point is, that has to be taken into account because when you have a professional heckler in your fan base, it's a scarlet letter for you to wear. But here's the problem. I can't blame Wizard fans for not showing up. Mm-hmm. It's a product that's horrifyingly mediocre. It's a product that when they believe, they get disappointed. And when they don't believe, they still end up, you guessed it, disappointed. I would put the fan base at about a 4.
I would be 3 or 4, I think.
Why don't we compromise 3.5? I'm not passionate about the stance on 4. And a 3.5 would take them to a total futility index score. Correct me if I am wrong. Leonsis ownership, 6.5. On-court futility, 7. We then ended up with a blistering 9 of off-court embarrassment to land at what? 22.5 and a fan score of 4. Gives us a 26.5. Where would that land on our index of the worst franchises in sports? Previous editions were the Knicks and Marlins. David.
26.5 put them at a tie with the Knicks first.
Ooh.
The worst franchise.
Marlins come in at?
Marlins are last. They are 24.
Well, we only have three teams.
But
David,
I'm saying,
I mean, let's calm down.
I mean,
All right. Thanks for listening. As always, please, for the love of God, get out there, download, subscribe, rate it, review it, do whatever you like. But we appreciate you listening either way. Take care. We'll have another episode for you next week.